Welcome to Nightlife, the podcast.
Have you ever tried cold water therapy? We're talking about, you know, that shivering, teeth chattering, heart thumping world of ice baths, winter ocean swimming and freezing showers. Some people swear by the benefits, including a euphoric feeling that comes afterwards. But what are the dangers and who is it most suited to? Now, have you tried it? What's been your experience? Have you actually become a bit addicted? And have you experienced this feeling of euphoria that's associated with it? Maybe you are part of one of these fabulously named swimming groups like the Eskimos, the Crusty Crustaceans, the Bold and the Beautiful, or the famous icebergs. Maybe you found it really good for muscle recovery after sport. My guest tonight is Mike Tipton. Mike is a professor of human and applied physiology at the University of Portsmouth in the UK. He's been looking at the pros and cons of, well, taking a chill pill. Hi, Mike. Welcome.
Hello, Susan. Nice to be with you.
Now, are you a cold water enthusiast yourself?
No, not really. I mean, from a research perspective, yes, been researching it for decades. And I do a bit of open water swimming as part of triathlon, but I don't, you know, it's not a habitual experience to go into cold water, no.
All right. So what is the science then, not your experience, but the science around the benefits of cold water therapy?
So on the sort of pro side of going into cold water, there's a big con side, which maybe we'll talk about later. But on the pro side, I mean, people claim that it's activating. They feel alive, awoken by the experience. And we pretty well understand the physiology underpinning that, because it's a pretty stressful thing. We're a tropical animal. We want to be naked in 28 degree air, and to plunge ourselves into cold water and water, let's say, below 15 degrees Celsius, is a pretty stressful thing to do. And the body reacts with releasing stress hormones, and they wake you up and make you ready to fight or run away, fight or flight response. So I think we know all about that. And really, you only need to be in for a minute to get that response. It's initiated by the fall in skin temperature. And the other couple of claims that you hear are improved immunity. You know, I haven't had a cold for a year since I've been doing swimming. I think the jury is still out on that. We found that actually indoor swimmers have the same experience. And then the final one is anti-inflammatory responses associated with going into cold water. Quite a lot of conditions have an inflammatory response. Depression, Alzheimer's, inflammatory bowel disease, type 2 diabetes. So there's a quite wide range of things that have an inflammatory component. And there are claims made about the anti-inflammatory benefits of cold water.
And what does the science say on that last one?
Well, again, for both the immune function and the anti-inflammatory function, we can speculate and we have hypotheses, but they've never really been tested. You certainly get some stimulation and vagal stimulation, anti-inflammatory responses by going into cold water, particularly if you get your face wet, although on the other side of the coin, it's potentially a very dangerous thing to do. But I mean, I think the fairest thing to say is the most of the evidence supporting the benefits is anecdotal. Now, anecdotal evidence is still evidence, but what we want to know is what's the underlying mechanism, and can this be evoked in other ways that would be helpful for people who maybe can't get to swim in cold water or, you know, immerse themselves.
Okay, so potentially we get some euphoria, maybe immunity, maybe something that helps with inflammatory conditions. What about the other side? What are some of the potential risks and problems associated with cold water immersion?
Yeah, I mean, we've known for many years that, you know, drowning is the second or third most common cause of accidental death in most countries. I mean, I note that over December, January and February in Australia, you lost somebody, about one person a day to immersion. And, you know, we've always known that cold water is hazardous, particularly the first couple of minutes. because of the cold shock response that we named back in the 1980s, because it's just shocking. You know, you're gasping, hyperventilating, uncontrollably, lots of workload placed on the heart. The first gasp when you go into cold water, which I'm sure lots of people have experienced, is about 2 or 3 liters. The lethal dose of salt water into the lung is about 1.5 liters. So that very first breath can be, cross the lethal dose for drowning.
So what then, do you mean the first breath? Do you mean that people are actually, that you're opening their mouths and sucking water in?
Yeah. So, I mean, most people who have been into cold water know that they get that, ooh, that quick gasp when they first go in. Well, if it's very cold water and you're not very well protected and you've fallen in, then that gasp is an uncontrollable inhalation of about 2 or 3 liters. The lethal dose of water into the lung for the drowning process is about 1.5 liters of salt water. So your very first breath in, you can initiate the drowning process. That's why we see, sadly, so many people drown. And, you know, it's about 100,000, about 1,000 a day, 365,000 a year around the globe. It's a hazardous response. The most hazardous response is driven by a fall in skin temperature on initial immersion in cold water. But actually, we also think that's the thing that's driving some of the beneficial things as well. So, you know, the answer is to do this, if you're going to do this, to make sure you're fit and healthy enough to do it and that you do it safely.
Yeah. So just if we could go back for a moment, Mike, I'm quite interested in that idea of the euphoria that a lot of people talk about. What would be producing that?
Well, it's probably the release of beta endorphins, which is the same. These are the same compounds you see released with exercise generally. I mean, you go into cold water and you increase your metabolic rate and you maybe do some shivering as well. It's a form of exercise, an unusual form of exercise, but it's a form of exercise. And that increase in the release of things like beta endorphins can decrease the symptoms of depression and increase the sensation of euphoria. A lot of people have spoken over the years about a runner's high. This is just another way of getting to it.
So we also talked about maybe it could help with depression. I know some people have said that when they're swimming in cold water, they can only concentrate on their breathing. And so the constant mind chatter goes out of the door. What are your thoughts on cold water swimming as a type of meditation almost?
Yeah, we did a study on a young lady who had quite serious depression. And she just had a child and was very keen not to be taking the drugs that she was given to treat the depression, and had heard about cold water immersion. So she came to the lab and we did a series of cold water immersions on her. After the second one, these are only 3-minute immersions, incidentally. After the second one, she was pretty miserable to the point where we said, you know, perhaps you shouldn't be going in anymore. You know, we think it's not good for you. She insisted on doing it. And by the sixth 3-minute immersion, where she halved her cold shock response that we've talked about, she said that was the happiest she'd felt, as long as she could remember. A year, she took up then open water swimming, and a year later is drug free and happy. That again is anecdotal evidence. We've published it in the British Medical Journal as a case report, and it's been peer reviewed. But I can't tell you the mechanism by which that occurred, because you've kind of touched on it already. When somebody goes cold water swimming, they're distracted. They get a sense of achievement, as this young lady certainly did. You're going often to a beautiful place, so there's green, blue therapy. You're doing it with others, so there's social inclusion. Then you've got the fact that you're exercising, you're in a weightless environment, and then there's cold. Now, which one of those is the active ingredient? I don't, the studies haven't been done. Most people, when they come out, have a cake and a coffee, so that could be it. But, what the underpinning question is, which of those factors is having this beneficial effect?
I'm fascinated. You said that she had halved her cold shock response by the time she'd been in a number of times. What does that mean?
So the cold shock response, that gasping, hyperventilation, increasing heart rate and workload of the heart on immersion, is very susceptible to habituation. So you can halve that response in as few as 2 or 3 minute immersions in cold water. And the important thing about that is you gain control back of your breathing sooner. So there's a shorter period in which you're at risk of aspirating that water. Now, that habituation occurs somewhere central to the skin receptors, and we know that from research we've done. And you see this if you get somebody who's used to going into cold water. So we've immersed Lewis Pugh, who swims in cold water all around the world to raise the the problems of oceans. And when he goes into cold water, you don't actually see where he goes in. If you look at his heart rate or his breathing, he's completely lost that cold shock response. The advice, incidentally, for the unhabituated individual is to float until you get your breathing back under control. So just if you find yourself in cold water, you're suffering with a cold shock response, it'll go away in about a minute. And during that minute, the best thing is to float. We call it float to live. It's a partnership with the Royal National Lifeboat Institution over here. And in Australia, I think it's being introduced as float to survive. A really good thing to do in the first minute until you get your breathing back under control.
Mike Tipton is a professor of human and applied physiology at the University of Portsmouth in the UK and has been looking at the pros and cons of, well, cold water immersion. One of my texters says, I've tried it four times, such bad and unrelenting neuralgia. I had to have serious pain medication. It was a horrendous experience. And Mike, I almost feel like moving out of the studio and giving it to my producer, Lockie, because he's actually a regular. He's a winter ocean swimmer. And he's wondering, he says he feels a hot sensation on the skin of his chest after a couple of minutes when the water temp's less than 16. And then he gets this feeling that the heat's spreading throughout his body. What would that be?
Well, one of the things that cold does, it tends to anesthetize your receptors. And so the cold sensation goes away. And then you get a feeling of numbness or paresthesia that some people interpret as warmth. One of the things, I mean, there's an enormous, as your two examples have just shown, there's an enormous variation in people's response to cold water. In some people, they will never habituate. Others habituate very quickly. We're seeing relatively rare conditions, such as transient global amnesia, where people just lose their memory as a result of going into cold water, just for the period of the immersion. They recover it within, 24 hours. We're seeing things like swimming-induced pulmonary edema. These very rare conditions, because there's so many people doing this now, that we're starting to see more and more of these unusual responses. We're also putting, we're asking people to go out and rescue more people. In the UK, we've seen a 52% increase in the number of rescues required of people going into cold water. The cold will anesthetize the cold receptors. And as they start to regain function, you get the sensation of warmth.
So if you manage to habituate, do you think there are long-term health disadvantages for people who are regularly swimming in cold water? Or if you've managed to habituate and you reckon you've got that feeling of euphoria, would that suggest that everything's fine and everything's on track?
Well, I think the most important, I think anybody who's gone in and done it and survived the experience, then it's just another form of exercise. And if that's the form of exercise they want to do, that's great. We're not here to stop people exercising. We're here to encourage people to exercise, given the other problems we have in society from sedentary behaviour, obesity, etc. The only thing we would urge is just if people recognise that this is a really stressful thing to do on your first go, a tropical animal going into cold water, and make sure that you have a proper medical screen to do it. You haven't got any comorbidities that are likely to be made an awful lot worse by going into cold. But provided you do that and you do it safely and you follow some pretty simple guidelines about getting a medical checkup, avoiding, going in if you have other problems, go with other people, lifeguarded beach, wear a wetsuit if you want, stay in your depth, don't stay in for more than 5 to 10 minutes. Provided you follow that, I don't think there's any problem with doing this. And as I say, there's an enormous mass of anecdotal evidence of it being beneficial.
So what would be, there's cold water, which I think you said was basically below 15 degrees, but I'd imagine that there would be a temperature at which you'd say, look, don't even think about it for anybody.
Yeah, the cold shock response peaks in water between 10 and 15 degrees Celsius. And so if you really want to take this up, having done all the things that we've said in terms of, precautionary checks, then I would start in the summer when the water is at its warmest, and in the UK that'll be between 15 and 18 degrees Celsius. And then as the water cools, you'll just continue to habituate. If you start going into very cold water, and there is an increasing trend to go and do ice water immersion, the problem then, you start to get into the area where you can end up with cold injuries of the periphery. Mm-hmm. So things, people will have heard of frostbite. You're not likely to get that in fresh water, although you could get it in salt water, which freezes at below the tissue temperature that was freezing. But in fresh water, you're more likely to get non-freezing cold injury, which very few people have heard of, but it's really debilitating. It's a lifelong problem. Your peripheries get cold, they shut down, they get painful, they don't warm up, you become cold sensitive, you can have persistent pain. So, you know, again, more is not better in this scenario.
Yeah. Mike, what about the post-swim period? If you want to do it, it's important to warm up afterwards. Do you have to do that immediately? And what should we be getting our core temperature back to?
Well, our advice is don't stay in more than 5 or 10 minutes. And if you haven't stayed in for more than 5 or 10 minutes, you won't have cooled that much. It's a physical impossibility for an adult human being to become hypothermic, i.e. deep body temperature below 35 to below 2 degrees below normal in less than 30 minutes. When you come up, yes, it is important. You will continue to cool just because of the conductive wave of cold that's going through your body for anything up to 20 minutes. Most people choose to wear something warm, have a hot drink. The hot drink doesn't do much for your warming. It does quite a lot for your psychology. There's absolutely no reason why, if you've only been in a short period, I say 5 or 10 minutes, you couldn't have a warm shower or sit still. If you've got to the point where you're hypothermic, then that's a dangerous thing to do, but few people will do that. But generally, be conscious that you're probably going to be at your coldest in terms of your deep body temperature about 5 to 10 minutes after leaving the water. And, you know, that's not a great time to start driving a car, for example. So properly rewarm. Now, how do you know that you're properly rewarmed? Well, you'll start to feel some blood flow back into your fingertips. Your fingertips are a really good way of determining whether you're shut down in the cold or you've opened up as you warm up. So starting to get warm extremities, cessation of shivering if you're shivering. These are all good signs.
So, Mike, what do you think? I know this is an enormous trend now for footballers to come off the field and plunge straight into an ice bath. Is that science-based then?
Yeah, again, there's plenty of theory in terms of the impact of cold on muscle perfusion, hydrostatic pressure, decreasing swelling and inflammation. However, the research that's done is pretty well split down the middle between those that say it's of benefit, and it seems to be a benefit if you're going to do something like a seven-a-side tournament where you may have to go back out and perform again in a relatively short period of time. If you've got plenty of time to recover, then it doesn't seem to make that much difference. Some of the experiments that have been done probably haven't had the best methodology. They haven't compared normal sort of warm downs that people do and stretching, etc. So I think that, as I say, I probably would say it's of some benefit if you've got repeated exercises to do in a relatively short period of time. But otherwise, I think the jury is still out on that one.
Yeah. So what are you going to be looking at next? What's the big burning question for you when it comes to cold water therapy?
Well, I think we've done enough of asking people if they think it's good for them, because it's really, you know, if somebody's doing something and you ask them, do you think that's good for them? It's likely they're going to say yes. I think really what we need is to be doing some of the research to find out what it is. What's the mechanism? Because as I say, if we can understand what the mechanism of any benefits is, then we can start to apply that. So, for example, take a ludicrous example. Maybe you only have to initiate a cold pressure response, and that involves putting a hand and a foot into very cold water, and you can get some of these benefits. Now, that means that's much more accessible to people than, you know, somebody having to find a body of cold water to go in. Maybe you can do this with a cold shower. There have been studies from from the Netherlands, for example, that show that, you know, ending your normal daily shower with a cold shower decreases the number of sickness absence.
Yeah. Do you know what, Mike, I might just bring in David in Canberra, who's actually joined us on the line, because David, you wanted to actually ask about cold showers, didn't you?
That's correct. Yeah, look, thanks. I think that sort of answers it. I was just wondering whether cold showers did have a beneficial effect. And you think run the hot water first, then a cold shower?
So, firstly, hello, David. Nice to speak to you. We know that a cold shower doesn't give you the same strength of cold stimulus as cold immersion, simply because that cold shock response is the more of the skin that's exposed, and the faster the rate of change of skin temperature, bigger response. But obviously, you still get some response when you go into the cold shower. Yeah, and there was a study done, it was in the Netherlands, and it looked at the effect of cold showering on health and work. And they looked at over 3,000 people who spent 4 weeks ending their daily hot shower with a cold shower, 29% fewer sick days from work. If they did, they did 30 or 60 or 90 seconds of cold at the end of their hot shower, and it didn't make any difference which one of those it did. So it comes back to the point I was making earlier, that a lot of the benefits that we see from cold, we think are coming from just the first 30 seconds or a minute from that sudden fall in skin temperature. People who did regular exercise had a 35% reduction in sick leave. People who did regular exercise plus this cold showering produced a 54% reduction in absenteeism.
Wow.
So something's going on.
Yeah. So, David, are you tempted into the cold shower idea?
Yes. Yeah. No, I've been doing it, and I was just wondering whether I was getting any benefit from it, but it sounds like I am.
Yes, sounds like you are too. Thanks very much for the call, David. And Mike, thanks so much for being with us tonight and explaining some of the research into cold water therapy for us on Nightlife.
That's a pleasure, Susan. Nice to be with you.
And you. Mike Tipton, Professor of Human and Applied Physiology at the University of Portsmouth in the United Kingdom.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.